This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Oregon 2nd District Congressman Cliff Binns. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Oregon Congressman Cliff Binns next. Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization sub-agency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Weather, supply-demand factors, input costs, global demand, and geopolitical events have challenged nearly all crop farmers in the country this year. Oregon 2nd District Congressman Cliff Binns says a diverse list of crops grow in his state, and all are being challenged this spring.
Whether it's onions or potatoes or sugar beets or cherries, or beans, all of that, all of those crops are not worth very much at all. And I could go through what we've been trying to do to try to help, but it's a disaster times for farmers.
Did farmers in your state receive any assistance, and what is the need now to get them through what proves to be another challenging period?
They did receive an extremely small portion of spread, like very, very thin peanut butter, that was inadequate for all kinds of reasons. The needs now are dramatically worse because of the skyrocketing diesel and fertilizer prices. It's a disaster made worse by all kinds of events.
Do you see an effort in the Congress to come up with additional funds for relief from disasters and also from economic challenges?
Well, it certainly is from those of us in farm states, and there certainly is from those of us who understand the damage that's been wreaked upon farmers by retaliation against the president's tariff policies and trade efforts. And just if I may camp out on that for a moment, the support in my area for the president is strong. But I will tell you that people are being damaged significantly by other countries refusing to allow import from the United States of all of our crops. And so there's a real movement in the farming communities I represent of saying, hey, Mr. President, you've got to do something to help us out. And I think that will take the form of some sort of additional funding. I'm not on the Ag Committee, and I'm not an appropriator, so I cannot say with any degree of certainty about what form that type of help would take. I know it has been spoken about on the floor because I've spoken to people about it. There's also a huge discussion about doing something to prevent so many onions from coming out of Mexico. There's a flood of onions out of Mexico into the United States that's contrary to all kinds of rules and regulations. And there should be, as long as people are talking about immigration, may I be talking about all these onions that are pouring in, and that needs to stop. On the potato front, I just heard this the other day. I've not checked it out, but I heard that China had actually entered into, some people raising potatoes in China had actually entered into a contract with a fast food operator here in the United States. I hope it's not true, but I actually heard it from a pretty good source. And so we need to be defending our farmers in these specialty crop areas better than we've been doing when it comes to just pure market opportunities. And so Sure, more money would be good, but better would be longer term trade arrangements.
Congressman, help me understand Oregon agriculture. How much is timber? How much specialty crops? If we're dividing the diversity of your state and the revenue that comes from farming and forestry and ranching, how does it shape up?
Forestry is huge. We have 30 million acres of timber in Oregon. There's 33 million, I think, in California, and another 32, maybe 35 million up in Washington state. So timber is huge. It's huge in my district and in some of the other districts. In fact, I'm going to say other than the district that's mostly Portland, timber is important across the board. You wouldn't know it when it comes to Democrat politicians in Oregon because they don't support getting back into the woods. They haven't voted appropriately for the Fix Our Forest Act on the Senate side. We did get it out of the House, thank goodness, and we had some modest Republican support for that purpose. But timber is huge, 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 and should be even more of a part of our economy if it wasn't for the spotted owl and other impacts there. The nursery area is probably one of the largest, if not the largest, farming sectors in Oregon. It's huge, and the climate is perfect for it up in and around the Willamette Valley and other areas in southern Oregon. Nursery crops are just astoundingly successful. I will say that it's been damaging, the lack of the building economy, new houses, new starts have dramatically and negatively affected nurseries. I also will tell you that our challenge with Canada has been terrific. I know a few days after the so-called Liberation Day last year, nursery folks came in to tell me that many contracts they had had with Canada had been canceled out of hand almost immediately by Canadians, damaging our nurseries here in Oregon horrifically. I should also point out that there are word-of-mouth campaigns against potatoes and onions in Canada, where people are saying, do not buy anything from the United States until you've exhausted all supplies of potatoes and onions from Canada, produced in Canada, grown in Canada. And we've been reaching out to different of our folks to try to do something about that, because I think that's totally illegal, those kinds of arrangements. But your question was, what do we raise here? And I would say cattle are very high on the list. Much of my area, which is 70,000 square miles, my district is huge, and it's taken up with the cattle. And I'm so happy that the cattle market is good. I grew up on a cattle ranch, and I know just how bad it can be when prices are low, as it seemed like they always were when I was growing up. But the great news is they're good now, and people are doing really, really well, and I'm very happy for that. There's in the Willamette Valley, there's just every type of row crop you can imagine, snap peas and beans and carrots and the like. The biggest problem we're facing there is labor, and we don't have enough of it. That's why I've been working as best I can in the visa programs to try to have more legal help on the farms.
Given the drought situation, the impact of cattle on your economy, that's got to be tough on pastures. And I also have to believe that wildfire is a threat not only to the pasture lands, but also to the timber industry that you depend so much on. What needs to be done either through legislation or regulation to help protect your land and your forests from this impact of dry weather here for this period?
Well, a great question. I'm very happy you ask it. The challenge that we face in the timber space is getting the environmentalists out of the road, because we need to get into the forest and remove some of the literally millions of trees that have grown up over the past 80, 100 years that are choking each other to death because there's so many trees per acre. My explanation has always been, or recently been, that we have trees so thick that a squirrel couldn't get through them. And I'm not joking. We have literally thousands of stems per acre, each one fighting for water and each one fighting for light and then dying. And all of a sudden you've got the perfect environment for a fire. And these aren't small trees. I mean, some of these trees are hundreds of feet tall and some are much smaller, but the point is You've got to get into those forests and you've got to thin them out if you're going to have a forest that's going to survive a fire. And when you have 30 million acres of forest in just Oregon, almost 100 million acres up and down the West Coast, it's the amount of money they put into thinning forests. One of my good friends in the Oregon State Senate, when I was in the Senate years ago, used to say, you know, you've given us the same amount of money. It's the same as buying somebody a fingernail clippers to mow your lawn. And that is the best analogy that I've seen when it comes to the shortfall in the amount of money necessary to try to clean up our forests. I would also say when it comes to other types of products, you mentioned the drought and the impact that it might have on range to feed cattle. Much of my district is, although in Oregon, much like Nevada, sagebrush and desert oriented, and the challenge there is to create fire breaks so that when these range fires start, there's a way of slowing them down. And we now, believe it or not, talk the Bureau of Land Management into allowing us to graze intensively across spaces to create cattle induced short grass that would slow down some of these range fires. It's a really, really good idea, and I'm very, very happy that the BLM has finally agreed to let us try that. It's funny, we had a rainy spring. It's not going to help with irrigation and thus not going to help with alfalfa prices, but it certainly is going to keep our range growing. And that means that if you have a Bureau of Land Management permit or if you have your own range to run your cattle on, you'll have grass for the next couple, 3 months.
Let's shift to another major topic. I know in March you had an opportunity to speak with Trade Representative Ambassador Jamison Greer. I have to believe U.S. MCA was on the docket for discussion. You mentioned some issues with Canada and some issues with Mexico. If you're advising the administration on this review of USMCA, what do you want to fix?
One thing I've learned about trade is there's always two sides to every trade. So if you're going to impose obligations on Mexico to discontinue importing into the United States, they're going to want something back. And the same is true for Canada. I think that's why we see the impasse right now with Canadian discussions. But what I would like to see for sure is a much more precise limit on the amount of specialty crops that are allowed to come in from Mexico. And the reason, there's all kinds of reasons for that, but the biggest one is it's unfair. It's unfair because of the dramatic difference in our exchange rates between the peso on the one hand and the dollar on the other. I used to tell people when they'd say, gee, don't you feel sorry for those folks out there working in the fields, immigrants all, and I would say, well, wait a minute, they're going to head back to Mexico. The money that they're sending back is worth 20 times what it's worth up here. So if you're earning $10, $15 an hour up here popping onions, then you're sending that home. It's worth 20 times that because of the exchange rate. Well, the same kind of argument can be made when it comes to import-export arrangements. And so all of this kind of thing needs to be better understood and better taken into account when we're talking about any of these crops, whether it's crops going in and out of Canada or here. But we've got to protect our people here or they'll all be broke and gone and we'll be dependent upon and subject to extortion by those who are raising our food.
You're a lot closer to Canada than you are to Mexico. You've mentioned some issues with the Canadians in particular. What would you advise the administration to your neighbor to the north?
Well, the thing is of greatest concern right now is wood and timber. And so what we have to be doing is recognizing the challenge that wood products face and the industry is facing. If you look across Oregon, the number of sawmills we used to have was in the hundreds. Now it's ridiculously low. And we have huge areas of Oregon now that are so far from a sawmill that there's no way in the world to pay for the diesel to haul the logs anywhere. So when they get cut, they just get decked up and left. It is really sad. And at the same time, we're busy allowing all kinds of wood to come in from Canada. Something is wrong with that picture, and it's got to be fixed. And so the same would be somewhat true with some of our other farm commodities. And I'm not sufficiently familiar with all of them to know, but I will tell you one thing that was quite interesting. I met with the cherry producers over in the northern part of my district, and they pointed out that they raised the best cherry crop in their history last year, and yet they could barely give cherries away. And that was because of the competition that was occurring out of other countries, and more to the point, the barriers that had been created by Korea and Japan and Australia and Vietnam and China against India, against our products. And so what I'd be telling the president is, look, you've got to use your tariff threat to drive down and break down these walls preventing our import into these other countries.
It might be a sidebar question, but when you suggest beef is a big part of the bottom line in your district, we're kind of darned if we do and darned if we don't with the Mexican issue of New World screwworm. Open the border too soon and you welcome the pest into the U.S., leave it out, and we still have a beef industry that is struggling with low numbers. What's your advice to the administration and your constituents about this issue with New World screwworm?
Well, I was certainly happy to see the money that is being spent on the facilities to grow the flies that are necessary to combat the worm. I mean, thank goodness they're doing that. So because we absolutely have to protect our producers from that horrible pest. As far as what to do about Mexico, my understanding had been in a brief conversation with Secretary Rawlins, and this was 3 or 4 months ago after the Argentinian beef thing, that they were going to begin to open the border but do it in a way that was productive of our markets here. I will tell you that my brothers that are still in the beef business, and they raise a lot of cattle, cow-calf operations, they understand the need for more beef in the market. They absolutely get it. And the challenge is how to bring that beef in without destroying what we've got, and at the same time without putting our herds at risk.
One of the big challenges agriculture, as I understand, in the Northwest has faced is the gray wolf and this endangered species listing that's there. Your staff told me this is a topic you like to talk about, so tell us the issues with gray wolf, and if you had the pen and paper to write a solution, what would you offer?
Well, I would instantly delist the gray wolf, because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of wolves in the United States, and many more thousands in Canada, and many more thousands in Alaska. We do not need more wolves. We got all kinds of wolves coming out our ears. We just had the packs in Oregon grow by, I want to say, 10-15% or more, and that's after we had 40 wolves killed because they were busy killing livestock. And so we've got too many wolves. So if I was writing something, I would say delist the wolf right now and then put tight controls in on the number of them. There's no reason to have a growing population of wolves at all. None. Zero. I actually wrote an article called How Many Wolves is Enough? And right now we've got more than plenty in Oregon and frankly across the United States. And the judge that decided that we needed to have wolves in every state, we're going to find wherever that judge lives and import a couple right next door. And because obviously he doesn't get it, that wolves are killing machines and they need to be controlled tightly. Sure, we got to have them. We're not going to get rid of them. But for goodness sakes, we don't need tens of thousands of them running around destroying our deer populations as they are and damaging elk herds and harming ranchers. Ridiculous.
In the West, I understand there is great demand for electricity and supply is a question. In terms of power generation, is there an adequate supply in your area? And what are your concerns about meeting the demand moving forward?
Great question. The initial question was, is there a shortage? The answer is yes, absolutely, there's a shortage. If we had a weather event of either too cold or too hot, we would probably see rolling blackouts in Oregon. And this needs absolutely to be addressed. Hydropower is a hugely important part of our energy mix here. The Columbia system provides enormous amounts of the portfolio of power for the Western United States, and it needs to be protected like the amazing asset that it is. The challenge of getting additional power, one thing that's being discussed is we let about 1,000 megawatts worth of power go down the Columbia River because of over allocation to fish flows, and that needs to be tightened up, and that's going to require appropriate judicial restraint instead of activism. And then we have an opportunity, I guess, probably a necessity of importing more electrical power into Oregon generated by fossil fuel but situated somewhere else, because Oregon, in its unfortunate progressive wisdom, and I use those terms incorrectly, it has decided to ban the creation of electricity with fossil fuel. And that isn't going to work. And it hasn't been something that would work since the day I walked out along with the other Republican senators of the Oregon legislature and put this state in Idaho until they came to their senses and dropped a cap and trade program. So we need to express to people that this wishful thinking they have regarding where power can come from is dangerous to everybody. And we need to start focusing on having enough power to keep up in the AI race and also just keep people's lights on.
Well, Congressman Bence, we want to thank you so much for taking time to give us an update on the Northwest and your great state of Oregon. It's open mic, and it's the first time you've had an opportunity to be here, and I want you to know that every time you come, the guest has the last word.
So let me just begin, Jeff, by saying thank you to you, but let me say a last few words about how important farmers are in my district, and ranchers are in my district. They are the absolute foundation of a huge part of Oregon and probably the most valuable and educated voters around. So I just want to say thank you to each and every farmer and rancher for all of the dedication and work they put into being citizens of Oregon and productive members of society.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Oregon 2nd District Congressman Cliff Bence, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.